It is 7:08, down to 78 degrees, but still, that is pretty darn summery, just about. I mean, feeling pretty good. Esme Murphy, along with Jonathan Lowe here in News Radio 830 WCCO. We got some great stuff coming up for you through 9 o'clock. This half hour, we are going to visit with the author of a new book called Gentrifier. And it's a book that looks at the issue of gentrification. Now, maybe you're not as familiar with that term because it's been a big issue in many other communities. But it's basically, essentially, and I'll ask my guests about this, but essentially it's, you know, those sort of rundown neighborhoods that, you know, once upon a time nobody really wanted to kind of live in and was kind of ramshackle. Suddenly they're red hot. And that's definitely happening in some parts of Minneapolis right now, downtown Minneapolis. And then coming up in the second half of this hour, we're going to visit with the project manager for the Nicollet Mall. And this guy must have a lot on his plate because that project has been kind of moving very slowly and a lot of questions about it. And then in the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to visit with my friend Professor David Schultz of Hamline University. He is just back from Israel. So we're going to get his take on that, but also certainly get his take on the extraordinary developments and the extraordinary fallout in the aftermath of the firing of FBI Director James Comey, as well as the obvious impasse that exists in our legislature. I mean, the legislature, Minnesota legislature is supposed to finish up their business a week from Monday. That's not that far along. They're all sitting in boats today fishing, and they caught some fish. And I don't think much else happened. But they've got to get something done this year. This is one of those budget years. And there really does seem to be a profound impasse here. And I've talked to some of these leaders, and it seems to me I don't really know how they're going to avoid a shutdown unless there's something dramatic that happens pretty soon. But anyway, that's in our 8 o'clock hour. But this half hour, we are going to visit with John Joe Schlickman. He is the author, one of the authors of Gentrifier, and he is with us right now. John Joe Schlickman, thank you so much for coming on.
Esme, so good to be here. Thank you.
All right. Well, let me ask you, first of all, what brought about the idea for this book?
Well, as an urban sociologist, myself and my co-authors have been caught in gentrification debates for decades, at least two.
Let me ask you, like, how would you, I mean, I gave my kind of off-the-cuff definition. I mean, how would you define gentrification? Because this has been a pretty hot issue in a lot of other communities, mm-hmm. and major cities. How would you define it?
Let me pull directly from what we used for the book. So I'll give you two. One is a transformation of a working class or lower class or a vacant area of a city into middle class, residential, or commercial use. So that's one. So transformation from lower class to higher class, either residential or commercial. The other one that I prefer, one of my co-authors helped develop it, was the reinvestment of real estate capital or real estate investment money into declining inner city neighborhoods to create a new infrastructure for middle class and high income residents. And the reason why we go with that one in the book and the reason why I prefer it is because in order for there to be a reinvestment, there has to be a disinvestment. And so one of the great injustices behind gentrification are the disinvestments that pave the way for today's reinvestments.
Got it. And you know, in some places, I mean, where there's been the most tensions from what I have seen and observed over the years is when you've got a lower income neighborhood that is still a neighborhood where people and families live, and suddenly they begin to get squeezed out as opposed to a neighborhood that virtually has nobody in it.
Right, right. I mean, these are the most controversial topics is when there's actual families being displaced. But, you know, of course, the more high-end units an area gets, whether it's empty or whether it was inhabited by lower income people before it, the more everyone feels the squeeze. So we also need to pay attention. Oftentimes there's a feeling of carte blanche when there's, you know, a factory that goes away and suddenly the city has, you know, a few acres and we just make it all luxury condos. We need to be mindful of all of the patchwork of development. But yeah, absolutely. Displacement is the hot button word.
All right. And in terms of your book, Gentrifier, what were some of the themes that emerged that you think, you know, going forward will continue to be hot buttons?
Well, you know, I think the future and one of the more important issues besides economic displacement is also cultural displacement. One thing that I always like to say is that real estate doesn't go on sale. And one of the reasons why certain areas are especially affordable today was because of unjust policies of the past that made Latino-owned and Black-owned housing worth a percentage of what white-owned housing was worth. We call these in the book the D's. In order to understand the R's, or in order to understand the revitalization, the revaluation, the restoration, all of these, the redefinition of the neighborhood, the renaming of neighborhoods, all of these things that we're seeing, we need to understand what paved the way for it. And so I think we're going to see increased attention on these, you know, more and more books and more conversations are being had about these past policies that paved the way for these great real estate prices. Why is this house on this side of the city 30% of the price of the house on the other side of the city? Well, it's policies like redlining. It's policy like 94 being built through the city. It's policies like racial covenants. And all of these things made a major impact on especially Midwestern cities. Could I read a quote by your federal district judge, Miles Lord, from the 1950s?
Absolutely.
Here's one. We went through the Black section between Minneapolis and St. Paul. That's a quote. Quote, about four blocks wide and took out the home of every Black man in the city and woman and child in both these cities practically. It ain't there anymore, is it? And what he's talking about are these land takings for highways, the denial of mortgage funds into neighborhoods. This is what set the ball in motion. And those boundaries, what we call demarcation in the book, those boundaries set in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, they're the same boundaries. They may have moved two streets, but they're the same boundaries. And so I think more and more communities are getting educated about, you know, why their neighborhood is becoming hot. And then that's opening up larger conversations. Our idea in Gentrifier is to say that any middle-class person looking for housing in the city, if they're in a gentrifying context, in other words, if there's gentrification going on in that city, they're a gentrifier. And so our goal is to destigmatize this word gentrifier and say a gentrifier is a middle-class person looking for housing in a gentrifying city.
But let me ask you about this, because I think that there is a movement across the nation right now, mm-hmm. away from decades of heading to the suburbs. And I know mm-hmm. more and more younger families are seeking to be across the country and here in our community, seeking to move back to the core of the city, to smaller homes where they can walk to places, mm-hmm. Where they can have different kinds of neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of movement, I mean, that's sort of almost happening at the same time. I'm not sure.
Absolutely.
Is that part of this, or is that just happening at the same time, or is it a parallel movement?
So let me tell you. So economically, right, we have deindustrialization. We have factory jobs that were rooted in the center of the city that have gone. This has caused neighborhoods to deteriorate because there's no longer those good-paying, low-skilled jobs. People who were employed in those jobs are now displaced economically. We have at the same time this huge rise in high-paying service economy jobs that draw 20-somethings and 30-somethings from new college grads, new graduate school grads who are looking to live near their job. And that's kind of the cultural shift, is that, as you say, people want, number one, a short commute.
I think the suburbs have lost some of the allure for, like, you know, when for some people, especially younger people in their 20s and 30s and maybe even early 40s.
Yeah, I had someone who's 70 years old in my family say to me, you know, a commute is just part of the working person's life. You know, what's wrong with you? Why are you making a big deal of this? Herb Gans, who's a sociologist, he said in the 1960s that the suburbs are just a showpiece for middle-class life. There's nothing special about the suburbs. They're just a manifestation of what people are looking for in the 1950s and 1960s. Gentrification is a manifestation of middle-class life in 2017. People are looking for walkability, perhaps as a backlash from our crazy overbuilding of the suburbs. But people are looking for walkability. People are looking for a short commute. People are looking for homes with character, however they define that. That can have lots of loaded meanings, but they're looking for crown molding and tall ceilings and these things. People are looking for diverse, class diverse, and race and ethnic diverse neighborhoods. And people are looking for a good deal. Now, oftentimes, all of these facets of a home buyer's decision can lead them into that rut that had been paved by previous disinvestment that wasn't so just or fair. It didn't just happen naturally. And this is why communities are mobilizing and say, hey, wait a second, you know, you can't just put that new rail line through here and say that you intend it for, you know, for it to do us good. We know what you're up to. We've seen this before. Let's have a conversation about this. And I think the very same students who are my students, who are graduating, who are against gentrification, in their mind, they're the very ones that are going to be gentrifiers because they want to live in the city. And that's who this book is for.
Right. In terms of you know, where that, because, you know, to some extent, it sounds like it's got, you know, sort of a negative connotation, you know, for many people it does. But yet for other people who find these new homes and enjoy these new neighborhoods, it's a positive. Is there a way of kind of sort of accommodating both, you know, those who are being displaced by these higher prices?
Well, you know, the new Mayor Hodges in Minneapolis is talking a very good talk from what I've just seen and you know, leading up to this interview, talking about things like inclusionary zoning, talking about a comprehensive plan. It's very difficult in this housing environment for an individual to make an ethical housing choice, because, you know, the suburbs in Midwestern cities were based upon exclusion. There's many downtown neighborhoods now that were built upon exclusion. You know, there's massive inequalities in Minneapolis, and some would argue that policing strategies in poorer neighborhoods are more about containing the ills of those neighborhoods within those boundaries than actually addressing them so as to protect some of the new residents who live downtown. So a mayor and local leaders who understand the dynamics of this. I happen to have an amazing alderman in Chicago who understands the dynamics of this and understands that, you know, that family is enjoying the character of their home. They are enjoying the cheap price that they got. And there's not a lot that they can do in and of themselves other than, say, move to the suburbs to not gentrify. So these things need to be understood so that we can, as a community, address these issues.
Well, in terms of, you know, where Minneapolis sits and how they're handling it versus other communities, where do we fit in?
Well, you know, inclusionary zoning is kind of messy. New York has moved very quickly on it. Chicago has moved quickly on it. Minneapolis, as far as I know, and I'm sure you have some experts listening, so I'll tread lightly, you know, Minneapolis folks who are based there. But by my understanding, Minneapolis is only considering inclusionary zoning. Now, basically, inclusionary zoning says when you build something new, a portion of that has to be affordable. And that can be dangerous as well, because that can give carte blanche to bulldoze affordable housing because you have the idea that, okay, well, 10% of the new units are going to be affordable. Well, maybe that person didn't want to live in the new condo building with the massage parlor on the bottom floor.
Right.
Maybe they wanted to live in their home, in their community. And so you talk about, you know, important issues. I think a massive, massive, massive issue is cultural displacement. To what degree do people have a right to their home in terms of the things that make their neighborhood their neighborhood? You know, your native New York has seen a tsunami of change blow through. And so Mayor de Blasio is, you know, working to make sure that people land in housing, but they're not landing in housing that is where their family is. They're not landing in housing where people are on the block doing the things that they're used to seeing them do, be it playing baseball or you know, in the street or sitting on the stoop and talking with neighbors. Those things are getting disrupted. So I think a major issue that we're just seeing that's starting to be addressed is this idea of cultural displacement. Even if people aren't economically displaced, the idea that that someone said, you know, how long does a community have a right to create a stable cultural and social community?
All right. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much for joining us, John Joe Schlickman, and one of the authors of the book Gentrifier. Thank you so much for joining us.
Esme, such a pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right, folks, 724, 78 degrees, much more ahead. We got to take a break. We got to give you some weather. We're going to have a discussion about what is going on with the Nicollet Mall coming up. And then in the 8 o'clock hour, I will visit with my friend, Professor David Schultz of Hamline University, who's just back from Israel. Can't wait to hear about, you know, his take about what's going on over there, as well as his thoughts about the remarkable political events of this past week, not just nationally with, of course, the firing of James Comey as the FBI director, but also the continued impasse at the Minnesota legislature. Keep it here. You're listening to News Radio 830 WCCO. It is 7:27 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy, along with my friend Jonathan Lowe, on a Saturday night, 78 degrees. We're kind of entering that zone, that special zone where it is nice and bright and light, and even a little bit of sunshine. This at this hour in the evening, it's just fabulous. And when it's this kind of weather, it's awfully nice. What a perfect day and forecast for Mother's Day. We're actually going to get the specifics of the forecast, but we all deserve it, us moms, I would think. I think we do. Anyway, it's great to be with you on a Saturday night. Esme Murphy, this next half hour, we're going to talk about what is going on with the Nicollet Mall renovation project. It feels like it's been an awfully long time, and it's not been easy. We're going to visit with the project manager for that project and talk about, you know, what is planned. And, you know, the stakes actually are not just, you know, for our community, but coming up here in, 7-8 months, the Super Bowl is coming to town. And I think that they're estimating 1 million visitors. I mean, it's crazy. I remember I'm old enough to remember, and I was working here the last time the Super Bowl was here. And there are a lot of people that come in. There are a lot of journalists from all around the country, even from around the world, who come in. And it really is important. The last Super Bowl was a smash, I think, because the expectations were so low. I think people expected it to be sort of so miserable. And it was the first cold weather market to host a Super Bowl, and everything went just amazingly well. But this is the centerpiece of our downtown, and it kind of looks the same as it did 3 years ago. Or 2 years ago. So we're going to ask the project manager about that. And then in our 8 o'clock hour, my friend Professor David Schultz is just back from a trip to Israel. So we want to hear about what he did there and also get his take. And I have not talked with him. I've texted him because I want to make sure he was going to be back, about, you know, his reaction to the extraordinary revelations or developments, really, the past week, the firing of James Comey. And also, we have what looks like a complete impasse at the Minnesota legislature with very little time left. And it looks like we are heading to a situation where the key bills, notably the budget bill, is not going to get done. I don't see how it's going to happen. The deadline is a week from Monday. And if that doesn't happen, the governor will have to call a special session. And if there's no agreement by July 1st, we go into a government shutdown. And last time that happened, it was pretty brutal. And a lot of people were not happy. I think it lasted about 20 days. So we'll talk to David Schultz about that. But first, we're going to take a break and get some weather. You are listening to News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is 7:35 in the Twin Cities, a very pleasant 78 degrees. Esme Murphy, along with studio coordinator Jonathan Lowe. We are going to talk about the status of the Nicollet Mall this half hour. And in our 8 o'clock hour, we're going to visit with my friend, Professor David Schultz, just back from Israel to get the latest, his take on the firing of FBI Director James Comey and the continued impasse at the Minnesota legislature with just, 9 days left, 8 days left until the deadline for that session to come to a close. But as I said, this half hour, we are going to visit and discuss the status of the Nicollet Mall project. Don Elwood is joining us, and he is the project manager for the Nicollet Mall. Mr. Elwood, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, and thanks for having me back on WCCO.
All right. Well, it's great to have you. Let me ask you. I know that the mall has been closed since July of 2015, and I got to tell you, I'm going back through photographs that I'm seeing online. And some of the construction and the way it looks in the winter of 2015, winter of 2016, looks exactly the way it looks now. I mean, is there any progress being made here?
There is progress being made. I think that, why don't I start with, we moved in this spring right in that first week of April. And since then, we've actually got a lot of accomplishments, and I can tell you that we've got all the roadway out from 9th all the way to Washington, so all that removal has been done, and most of the sidewalk has been done. I do need to keep one sidewalk on one side open the entire length of the mall for pedestrian traffic, and then with that, we've moved into many of the intersections as well. So we have come in pretty aggressive in the first, I would say, 6 weeks. Now, what's been put back, I know there's change. Maybe the photo you saw doesn't have change, but I can walk you from the south, that that intersection at Alice Rainville Place, that is complete. I think we're going to be opening that up next week, roughly.
And that's kind of like by PV Plaza, right?
No, that's right by the Hyatt and the Millennium and Westminster Church.
Okay, well, that's PV Plaza.
The next block up, I think, is PV. That would be from...
Well, Westminster Church is like the one end of PV.
Yeah, you're right.
This is my neighborhood here.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I spent a lot of time walking this. I guess I just want to ask you is just, and how long have you been the director of the project?
Since I got involved in around 2015.
Okay. As I understood it, it was supposed to start in 2015 and take 18 months.
I think our start date was 2016.
Well, the mall was closed in 2015.
Yep.
And I'm seeing, I see pictures from the Star Tribune in January of 2016, and it's completely ripped up. I mean, it just seems like this has been interminable.
Yeah, it has. It has taken a while, and there's a significant amount of coordination that goes in. So in 2015, we moved in to have investment in the private utility side, which would have been the private utilities like Xcel Energy, CenterPoint, CenturyLink, as well as public utilities, sewer and water. And that was majority of 2015 until June of 2016. Then in June of 2016 is when the roadway group moved in and started to do their work.
But weren't there delays, though, because some of the projections and the estimates for the project were completely off?
How do you mean completely off? I think...
some of the bids that came in were off.
Yeah, we had...
From what the projections were.
For the budget?
Yes.
Yeah, we had... We put out a bid in roughly October of 15, and we ended up getting only a single bid there in the winter of 15 that surpassed my ability to deliver. And I think coming into that, what we had done is we had two independent cost estimators work on what they thought that project would come in at, and they both arrived at about the same number, and we conducted meetings with contractors in advance to tell them what we're trying to get accomplished and what the work scope was, and we also provided additional time for the contractors to put together a bid, and lo and behold, we only got a single bid, and I couldn't move forward with that number, so we had to repackage the project and put it back out, and then we were able to get successful bids.
So in 2015, in the summer when the mall was closed first, because it was in the summer of 2015 that the mall was shut down, right?
Yeah, in July we took the buses off. Took the buses off the mall. I mean, when you say closed, I mean, we still had all the pedestrian travel open, and there were bikes on the mall for a while there as well.
Well, I think the construction had to have started in the winter or the fall and winter of 2015, if I'm looking at this picture on the start.
So it started ripping it up.
What was the, back in 2015, what was the original final date for completion?
We didn't have an original final date. We were projecting a grand opening of 2017. I did not have a final date because I needed to wait until I got a bid to put a schedule together. So I knew it would take me until 2017 to have a grand opening. I just didn't have the exact month.
I recall, though, when the farmers market was moved, what we were all told, you know, and reporters were told, is that the farmers market would be back on Nicollet Mall for the summer of 2017.
Yeah.
And that's obviously not going to happen.
That will not happen. That's correct.
Wait, what is, I mean, when will it be done? Because I see these signs with Mary Tyler Moore saying, you know, we're going to make it after all. And I think that's, you know, people, and I also saw signs, I think it was at the local, I was in the Skyway, and it said, believe it or not, we're still here. I think you know, for the businesses there, and there's some, you know, wonderful businesses and restaurants that left, this has been devastating.
I love the restaurants on the mall, and I talked to Josh at the local frequently, and that was a nice sign that he put up. You asked when the mall's going to be done. You know, we said substantial completion in 2017, and that got a little traction of what does that mean. And what that means to the general public, to the public that's out there, is all the sidewalks are in, the roadway's in, the lights are turned on, the trees are in, the barricades are gone, and it's open. I think there's a couple of things that that present a little bit of challenge for me. One is there's a beautiful art piece down in front of the library that's very large, and they need to haul that in pieces and then assemble it on site and install it. And then there could be a few trees that, due to the species and the time of the year, may not be able to be planted in the fall and have to wait until spring. But other than that, we'll be done.
And the whole thing will be done.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously, I think we all know the Super Bowl is coming here.
I've heard that, yeah.
And right now, it doesn't look very good. I mean, I guess, you know, maybe it was the 35W bridge disaster that has a certain, in a certain mode. But, I mean, obviously, that had, you know, you had people like Senator Klobuchar and Senator Coleman at the time and everybody working together. And they got that thing done in what? Less than a year.
Yeah.
This is 12 blocks.
It is a mile. And keeping pedestrian traffic open on the mall is quite a challenge. I have 2 miles of pedestrian fencing, and I'm building bridges into these into the storefronts. I have to keep everything open. So from a pedestrian standpoint, if I look at where U.S. Bank and McCormick and Schmick's and Men's Warehouse is, you know, to make that happen, we were bringing the pedestrians into U.S. Bank from the north past Men's Warehouse, and we had the south totally closed in front of the newsroom there, or in front of McCormick and Schmick's. And then we have to build that new sidewalk after we get the underground structural soils for the tree system put in place. And that sidewalk goes in a 3-to-5-phase process, and I get that sidewalk in, and then I have to move the pedestrians coming up from the south to get into U.S. Bank while I close the part in front of Men's Warehouse, and then I go through that same 5-step process. And then once that's completed, then I look at the east side, and I have to close that down half at a time as well, making sure I get people into the building. So it's a very orchestrated, staged process. But I would like to point out we're open on the mall from Grant at the south. The sidewalk's in on both sides, I believe, all the way up to 9th. There's a couple of pockets where I need to put in some trees, but we got that sidewalk in front of WCCO.
By Target?
Yep, by Target and WCCO TV. That went in this spring, and then, you know, moving as I move north.
Well, I've had, like, some trouble getting to my Target.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I guess, are you getting all, do you have the resources you need from the city? I mean, are they giving you enough workers?
I have the resources. The contractor has the resources. It's more about coordination than orange vests on the job site right now. It's, I can tell you that there is significant private investment going in on the mall. It's not just this roadway project. There's investment at Westminster. Brits made some improvements. Zalo's made improvements. Target's made improvements. Nikon Fifth is new. There's that Opus development across from the library that's going in. And coordinating with that work, if I look at Westminster, for example, we came in last year. They had an 8-story building they had to remove. And so they occupied that whole east sidewalk up until about 2 weeks ago to make that renovation. That's called coordination with the private side for them to make investments in the corridor as well, so that when we're done with this project, we have a fully completed mall, including the private sector investments that are needed as well. And I think that's a big part of it. It's that coordination that gives the appearance that maybe nothing's happening on that block, and that's what's needed to make this happen. So the workers are then put on a different block, and they move on and do other work that's on the critical path of the schedule to make this all happen. We are on schedule to be with that completion in September or November of 2017. And depending on where you are on the mall, some of it looks finished and some of it does not. So it kind of depends on where you are.
Right. Well, I guess, you know, just where I walk, and I walk this area quite often, you know, it doesn't look finished at all. And I just drove through it because I checked, you know, I drove, you know, across Nicollet, you know, right at the Target, which is what?
10th.
And you know, looked both ways because I knew I was going to be talking to you about it. Let me ask you, though. So you've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of people coming here for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And a lot of the great things that were downtown are not going to be there anymore. You know, is that because of the construction? I realize this may be a little beyond you, but I mean, I feel like the downtown has taken such a hit because of it, or this part of downtown. Certainly the North Loop is, and we just had a whole segment previously about the North Loop, and it's hot and it's ready, and, you know, it's got all kinds of cool restaurants, but this part of downtown has taken a hit.
It is a little beyond me. There's a lot going on in downtown, and I think when I work with our partners at the Downtown Council and the DID and others in downtown, they're aware of the impacts that retail is having in downtown, and they are talking about that. And in fact, the redesign and reconstruction of the mall is part of that 2025 plan. It's part of reinventing that mall in downtown. So it's actually the reconstruction of Nickel Mall is part of the solution to what we're experiencing in Minneapolis.
Right. Okay. And I don't mean to hit you so hard. I mean, I think you have to have heard it. And we're talking with Don Elwood. He's the project manager.
You're not hitting me hard. Project. These are not surprising questions.
I just think people feel very, very frustrated. I've talked to business folks. I've talked to the folks at Haskell's. I think that there's just a lot of frustration. There's also, I got to tell you, that, you know, in terms of being walking down and working very odd hours as I do, along with, you know, many people that I work with, you know, it's one of the privileges of working for a news organization is you get to do some really cool things, but you do have very odd hours.
Yeah.
It's kind of the whole scene of that part downtown and walking around. It's kind of the whole, you know, there's a lot of homeless people there. I mean, it's just completely turned.
You hit me with a lot of topics there, didn't you?
I just feel like, you know, I just feel for somebody who has worked downtown for 2 decades, and I'm not alone in this. I know that this is an issue politically, but it's the character of downtown is really taking a hit. And I'm just hoping that it can come back when this is done. And you're saying it's all going to be done by November.
Yep.
Okay, so that means the bus is back there. And
yeah, I'm working with Metro Transit to determine what they need and what I need and what they, you know, how to coordinate when those buses come back on the mall. You know, looking ahead, in June, that first week of June, you're going to start seeing some trees arriving on the job site, and these are pretty big trees. I'm looking forward to that, and I think that second week of June, they start going in the ground, and all of a sudden that the mall from maybe that first six blocks really changes complexion, and I do have a problem at a couple of intersections that we're working through,
And so when you say the first six blocks, are you talking the first six blocks from?
From Grant all the way up to about 9th.
Grant, you're talking, oh, Grant,
yep,
okay,
yep,
okay,
yep,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
okay,
Grant down there by the Hyatt. And,
right.
You know, we'll move north with the plantings, and then as soon as those trees are in, we start following in with the lights. And so as, you know, we're 6 weeks into the summer, and you know, it wasn't too long ago, it was still pretty cold out, and this warm weather makes me think we're further along in the year than we are, but we really aren't. We haven't hit Memorial Day yet. And so, you know, when we get into July, we'll start seeing some of these things coming online and more things happening on the corridor.
So we're going to make it after all?
Well stated, yes.
Okay.
We're going to make it after all.
Okay, well, listen, I appreciate your answering this. Obviously, you're not the only person involved in this, but, you know, I do think is that there are a lot of questions, and you know, you're saying, hey, hang in there, and we're going to see some changes. I think the trees would be welcome as well. Don Elwood, I certainly appreciate it, and I appreciate your willing to take the tough questions, because I think a lot of people do have questions about this one. So
yes, they do, and thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, sir. Thank you very much. I appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Appreciate his coming on, and I certainly hope he is correct. We're going to make it after all. I could play that song here. If I could sing, I'd sing it, but I can't sing. So anyway, folks, let's take a quick break. You're listening to News Radio 830 WCCO. Oh, my. Interesting discussion, and I do want to say a big thank you to Don Elwood, the project manager for the Nicollet Mall project. I just think that for people who work and live downtown, and I think more and more people are actually living downtown in that North Loop area, it's been tough. This project has been very tough, and I think a lot of people do have questions, and it's already emerging as a central issue in the mayor's race. There are at least one major challenger to Mayor Betsy Hodges, who was bringing it up as an issue about people are upset about it, and they're wondering and questioning the timeline. And I just wonder, when it comes to the Super Bowl, what businesses are there going to be left there? I don't know. You know, I mean, obviously there are some, but I think the loss, obviously, of Macy's, and that is certainly not to be completely blamed on this. I think there were other issues there, but I don't think it helped. And then the loss of that Barnes & Noble, which I think is obviously a bigger Barnes & Noble than most Barnes & Nobles, but I really like that Barnes & Noble. I do think it's very difficult. I think it's very difficult walking around. I think it's difficult. And as I was telling Jonathan in the break, I was sort of whining about it once, trying to get across the street and getting penned in. And I looked to my right, and there was a gentleman who was blind, who somebody had leapt to help. So we'll see how it fares. We'll see if... we're going to make it after all, and we'll see if in November it is all done. All right, folks, coming up here on News Radio 830 WCCO, the one and only Professor David Schultz, back from Israel with his perspective on Comey and the impasse at the legislature.